Live streaming at 991fmtalk.com.
The FM News and Talk of Northern Nevada, 99.1.
And 92.3 FM.
Now, John Potter, live and local. Current temperature in Reno, 79 degrees, about to hit 80 degrees. Our next guests don't come on till 11 o'clock. The Douglas County Republicans coming by at 11 o'clock this morning. We'll talk politics then. Until then, it's just me and you. If you'd like to bring up something, 884-9910. So let me bring up a few things. And Fox News just had the story about what the president had to say about PBS, of course, with the funding cutbacks and how our local congressman voted in that. So we'll start with that. Let me just say before we get to that, since we're talking media, okay, Stephen Colbert was canceled this week, but he stays on the air until next May. That guy is going to be tearing a new one on CBS all the way into next year. You thought I was bad about CBS and Channel 2. It's going to be brutal. But the truth is, and this is the real reason he was canceled, the show just was not making money. It was operating at a loss for one reason. People don't really watch those late night talk shows like they used to. The Carson and Leno days are long gone. Viewership is way down, not just on late night, but overall for broadcast TV. The majority of viewers now stream, the majority. And it started with the young, and now everybody realizes that they don't have to wait until 11:30 every night to sit in front of their TV to get the latest political so-called humor. Local TV news ratings are down because, see, we have this thing called the internet, and someone who has a smartphone in their hand has the world in their hand. And the same goes for every Roku or smart TV in every home. You may now access any sort of information you choose. The Pew Research Center data reports that 80% of people get their news, at least sometimes, from a smartphone, computer, or tablet. And with thousands of free weather apps and free news apps, the slice of the broadcast TV pie is thin and getting thinner, and this also applies to PBS. And yesterday, the House gave final approval to President Trump's request to claw back about $9 billion to public broadcasting and foreign aid. It now goes to the president for his signature. Despite voting to rescind funds for public TV and radio, our Congressman Mark Amadei said he still supports PBS and NPR and holds out hope that the money will be restored to PBS and NPR before the October 1st deadline, because he said that thousands of his rural Nevada constituents rely on public broadcasting. Well, from my visits and friendship over several decades in the rurals, they don't watch public broadcasting. They are not the audience that tunes in to hear and watch the left-wing progressive news. And, of course, PBS is not neutral. And I've always felt that if it's funded by the government, i.e. us taxpayers, it needs to be unbiased, which it isn't. You know, everybody forgets the story a couple of years ago. Remember the employee, the former employee of PBS, he got booted, but he wrote this long article about what it's really like in the PBS and NPR newsrooms. Vitriolic, I mean, angry at conservatives, and it comes through on the air, just like it did when I was working at Channel 2. Same deal. But these the rurals are not, you know, PBS viewers. I and not only that, I don't think we need the government paying for any news. But as for Amede's reasoning that trimming the PBS budget would have, quote, significant impact on thousands of his rural constituents, common sense tells me that most in our deep red rural counties do not watch or listen to liberal, pro-Democrat propaganda. And this notion that
FM
public...
Talk. Radio. 99.1. KKFT.
Are you tired of having the big New York investment firms constantly pushing their social agenda?
That was my fault. The phone call.
Okay, Phil.
I'm sorry. We're on.
All right. Okay. Where was I? Anyway, this notion that public broadcasting is essential, especially for rural areas, is nonsensical. It's not the 1960s anymore. The rurals also have this thing called the internet. And they watch any darn thing they want. You know, for example, if you've heard of YouTube, hey, they got that too in the rurals. You know, they got Netflix. They got it all. You may access entertainment if you want. Educational stuff for your kids is there. I would just say that we are served and we really don't need it anymore. And who is it in the rurals who really likes the warmed over British TV shows or the 45-year-old Pete Seeger and Kingston Trio concerts interrupted by begging for money and selling $75 tote bags. The rurals don't need, I'm sorry it's a harsh thing to say, but the rurals don't need public broadcasting. The corporation of public broadcasting doesn't need money from the government. The people who like their shows, you know, PBS does very well with memberships, and I say good and congratulations. I mean, if you use a product worth paying for, it's perfectly fine. And also, they don't need public funding because PBS sells advertising and has wealthy underwriters, right? They do just well. You know, this word on behalf of our underwriters. Okay. We have commercials, we have advertisers, we have sponsor partners in bringing our programming to you, and we're glad to have it, and we're thrilled, and they are a huge, important part of this radio station. And if public broadcasting wants to go out and do that, those partnerships will be good for them, too. And hopefully it helps those sponsors, and hopefully it helps fund public broadcasting, and the taxpayer won't have to. There's just no need. And the notion that, well, if we don't provide this, nobody's going to have it, is just not right. And further, I think it's problematic that public broadcasting is a nonprofit organization and doesn't have to pay taxes. The others of us in broadcasting, you know, the TV station you like to watch, or if you listen to this station, we're all paying taxes, and they're big taxes. Why that operation doing exactly the same thing without market competition is not. Why don't they have to pay taxes? And the notion that public broadcasting is somehow teetering on the verge of poverty, it's not true. Why should they be underwritten by taxpayers? The answer is they should not. And speaking of those, let's take a call. Johnny is called from Sparks. Hey, Johnny, I'm glad you called. Welcome to 99.1, 92.3 FM Talk. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. Hey, a couple of thoughts. I'm confused on Mark Amede. He's either not listening to the people that elected him, which were all red, or he's listening to the people that he wants to run with, which is all blue, the Democrats that he's voting with on a regular basis. So I'm really confused about him and how he's doing things.
Well, he is trying to please both sides of the aisle. And by the way, he did vote for the cut to PBS. But then he said he hopes that by October 1st, that money can be returned to PBS. So he's trying to make everybody happy here. But he did vote for the cut in the House.
Just, like I said, just confusing for how he speaks. And then the other thing that I'm confused with, too, is 80% of the funding, as I saw on a graphic from Fox News, business, 80% is private money, corporations that give. The other 20% is the amount that we took back. We clawed back $9 billion. So that tells you how big of an organization NPR
Right, you are. And Johnny, I have not seen the studios in Reno, but in the big cities that I worked in, it was the PBS stations that had the most palatial studios of all the broadcast stations in any city I've ever been to. Best equipment, the highest paid people. It's certainly striking.
Yeah, it is. And we got the Rhino, who's the president of the university, that's funding. He's getting public money to fund. He's not abiding by the executive order and Linda McMahon on gender equity. So he's getting all of that money and he's feeding it into public radio and public television.
Well said, my friend. Well said. I appreciate the call. Anything else, Johnny? Oh, okay. All right, let's good time to take a break, I think. My phone number here is 884-9910. I'm John Potter, here every Saturday 9 to noon. Back in after a quick break on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk, FM News Talk, time 10:17.
Audience participation suggested. KKFT is Nevada's Fox News FM Talk station, 99.1.
And 92.3 FM.
I'm getting hooked on my favorite topic, broadcast TV. So just one more thing I have to bring up because I just remembered, speaking to the big news stations, ABC Wednesday night, David Muir's story on the Obamas. As David Muir introduced the story with, "We are finally addressing all those wild divorce rumors over Barack and Michelle Obama." And I had to stop and myself and think, what divorce rumors? I mean, and they didn't have the story. They didn't even provide the source of the supposed rumors on a network newscast. A very straw man, you know, and I saw a setup here, you know, so they expect us to immediately accept the premise that the country is all talking about these divorce rumors. And then they give the Obamas airtime to lambast the supposed terrible rumors. This is a network newscast, folks. Actually, that story on ABC and wherever else it ran was really turned out just to be there, just to plug Michelle Obama's anti-Trump podcast. That was the only reason for this. And the story ends with all smiles on the anchor desk. It's a, you know, that it's a news anchor rule. Smiles on Obama stories, frowns on Trump stories. I don't trust ABC and especially not CBS. I saw it work how, you know, our CBS scripts came from just one viewpoint and left out the other side. And, you know, it's gotten to the point where anytime I'm feeling too good about myself or about the United States of America, all I've got to do is just turn on the network news and then watch it for 5 minutes. And I find myself properly depressed. There is now, well, it's actually been there for a long time, but there is something is innate in the network news viewpoint, which is negative. And I see it every night. America's flawed. Other countries don't like us. This Republican's a racist. The economy and immigration and cutbacks. Everything sucks. We're always wrong. We've got to change this because it's all evil and bad. And that really is the summation of today's negative and dramatic TV news. The media has made us feel like we're going to war or to hell every day now. And we're now in a period of time where the news media, mainly TV news, news in quotation marks there, is creating more panic than ever. And the American public is responding and is behaving like a confused and untrusting and somewhat angry crowd like they want us. And here's the deal. If you look at answers to the questions, to the question, are you proud of America? Yes or no? 3-1. Republicans are proud of America. 3-1. Democrats are close to 1 out of 3 proud of America. That's not just my take. That's what polling shows. All right, texts I didn't get to last Saturday. John, with all the doom and gloom that the Democrats claim will result from the big, beautiful bill, I predict a future news headline about 5 years from now. Climate alarmists and zero population growth activists are asking, where are these tens of thousands of deaths that we promised? Yeah, dark humor. Very good. Thank you. John Potter, I emailed RPD, SPD, and WCSO, the Washoe County Sheriff's Office, about all the cars with no license plates I see every day. Crickets. Then Sparks Police Department arrests a kid for riding his dirt bike and charges him with no registration and insurance. Chaps my behind on what their priorities are. Yeah, but, though I see both cases equally dangerous right there. And the kids on electric bikes thing, that's actually a trend that I think they're just trying to nip in the bud, quoting Deputy Fife. And JP, Ms. Masto must know a bunch of billionaires that work for tips. And yes, I will do the J. Potter breakfast. Okay. I got to bring up Ms. Masto at 11 o'clock with the Douglas County Republicans. Come on the show because I'm getting nervous about this upcoming next election. We need somebody who can fix that situation with our Senate seat. That's all I'll say for now. Okay, and what would be the best local breakfast place for our motley crew that somebody suggested? Are we PJ's people? Are we Peg's people or Big Ed's people? I love them all. I know we're not Perrin people, I don't think. Okay, let me see what else. Oh, one more national story. President Trump's plan to end birthright citizenship for the children of people who are in the U.S. illegally remain blocked as an order from a judge went into effect just yesterday, and another judge seems inclined to follow suit. Now, this all started from a lawsuit that seeks to protect babies who would be denied birthright citizenship by the administration. The original judge granted a temporary block of the president's order restricting birthright citizenship from going into effect. The suit was brought on behalf of a pregnant immigrant, immigrant parents, and their infants who would be affected by the president's executive order. The judge said, quote, depriving a person of the longstanding right of birthright citizenship was irreparable harm, and that birthright citizenship was the greatest privilege that exists in the world. And he's right. You know, I know you don't really need to hear the view of a TV news has-been, but for what it's worth to me, it's those words in the 14th Amendment are pretty straightforward and clear. And it means if you were born here, you're a citizen here. If you want to end anchor babies, secure the border and control visas. But the 14th Amendment means what it says, right? I don't like pregnant immigrants coming here to have a baby, anchor babies from women, even flying to the U.S. and getting low-cost delivery and automatic citizenship for their kids. But there are other ways to do this. And Trump, he was early on the, best so far solution, secure the border. But the babies themselves are innocents. And this is a tenet that goes back to the Bible. You know, do not scorn the son for the sins of the father. Newborns, wherever they are from, are innocents. And as American citizens, we should abide by our Constitution and its 14th Amendment, regardless of when it suits us. You know, some of us like to say we support the Constitution until it doesn't fit with what we want. And then, we justify not abiding by it. And I believe that sticking with the Constitution is what's responsible for creating the best form of government in history. Put that in all caps. Let's not touch it. It works. It's about consistency. And if we choose to differ from the Constitution when it suits us, then we have no argument against those who, for example, think guns should be banned when we say that is unconstitutional. Am I making sense there? And I'm sure that most of you will probably disagree, but that's just the view of a has-been TV news guy. All right, it's a beautiful day. We just hit 80 degrees in the Reno area. We have the Washoe County Republicans, who will say a lot of things you do like, coming up at 11 o'clock. Until then, open topic from you. Anything, especially local, 884-9910 is the number to call. We're going to take a short break and get the latest from Fox News update here, and I'll be back. I'm John Potter. 99.1, 92.3 FM Talk, FM News Talk, time 10:29.
The golden age of America begins right now.
It's The Weekend with John Potter.
I wish I lived in the golden age.
99.1 FM and in Lyon County, 92.3 FM News Talk.
10:34, live and local. It's good to have you here. Really, really is. I love hearing from you folks. I'm just checking the texts. Some good ones. I appreciate it. Let's go to the phone. Calling from Reno, it's Miss Mary. Hi, Mary. I'm so glad you called. Good morning.
Good morning. I was just calling because of something you said about babies that are born here are automatically citizens. I think yes, that only applies if your parents are here legally. Because my dad brought us over, and my brother and sister were born here, so they're citizens, but because they were legally here to begin with.
The 14th Amendment, Mary, does not make that distinction. The 14th Amendment began when the racist Democrats were trying to fight the citizenship for all the slaves that were brought to this country. And the racist Democrats at the time tried to take away or prevent them from becoming American citizens. And that's how the 14th Amendment began. But they certainly didn't look ahead 100 or so years to see with our current situation what it is. But as it reads, if you're born here, you are a U.S. citizen.
Yeah, but how does that work if the parents are illegal and they're going to be sent back? The babies stay here? That's what I don't understand.
Yeah, that's another issue. But, it says what it means, and it means what it says. And it that's how it reads. I mean, I've read it. I mean, history was my favorite topic in school.
Yeah.
And it's a big topic with me in the Constitution. And that's
okay, the only thing I'm thinking is that the slaves were brought over here legally by us, or by the people that were here. So technically they were legal because they were brought here. So the babies do become citizens. That's why I don't understand that.
Take a read on it. It has no asterisk on the 14th Amendment. Either fortunately or unfortunately, I'm just saying what it says.
Okay.
But I appreciate your call.
Thank you.
All right, dear. Take care. And all I can say is with this influx of people over the last 20 years or so from Latin America, those who have come here legally and even those who have come illegally and work hard here, if all the good working ones find some way to legally stay and become citizens with that hard working ethic, that's what makes success, you know, for them and us. And I just tip my hat to people who get up and really work wherever they're from, whatever their background. The person who works always comes out on top over the person who does not work. And I have a friend who moved here from Southern California. Hey, don't we all have friends here who moved here from Southern California? Oh, yeah, I have one of those. But he tells me the biggest shock growing up in Southern California and the biggest thing you will not hear in the regular national discussion on the news and out here is that the most anti-illegal immigration people anywhere are the legal immigrants. I mean, we're talking strict, practicing, Colombian, Mexican Catholics, like my high school girlfriend. But why did I say that? I had no high school girlfriend. But nobody wants those who don't go through the process deported more than them. It's not a bunch of white people being racist, like, you know, we're always accused of. It's just not. And we say that legal immigrants are one of America's greatest strengths. They're so often wonderful people. But we, and I've said this before on this show, we have made it almost impossible to come here legally. And we've made it, in years past, so incredibly easy to come here illegally. And then our mainstream media champions the illegals, like they're victims of something, while the ones who are here, who went through the process and legally pay our nation's taxes, they are a great, they are great Americans. Get in line, sign up, and if that truly is as hard as some people say, I'm not at all opposed to changing the system over how you get in here. Yeah, I understand that the government is not inherently efficient, and you're not wrong to call them that, and it's terrible. Like, we do have a lot of jobs in agriculture in our state, and we have a lot of other jobs. They don't have the workers. Other countries, like I know Canada, they do this. They gatekeep and let in people who would be hardworking people. They screen them, and they would not be a burden on their country. And there should be an easy, affordable way for them to come here and do these jobs, working, you know, walking honorably in the front door with their head held high, right? I'll tell you how much Canada gatekeeps. I tried to become a citizen of Canada because my family owned property in Canada, and some of us in our family were born in Canada, not my parents, though. And I tried to, they didn't want me at all. They have an online test, and I wasn't even close to passing the first stage. One of the big things you have to do if you want to go to Canada, well, you have to prove your worth. You have to prove also that you're not going to take a job away from a native Canadian. And you also have to speak French. That's one of the, you get a certain percentage approval if you speak French. All this kind of stuff. And we don't do any of that. We want the best, right? We want the best workers. They would be a true asset to us. And that's why there should be that easy, affordable way for them to come here and do these jobs, walking honorably in our front door with their head held high. We would be a blessing to them and be good for everybody at the end of the day. Now, did you notice that the deportations of the illegal aliens have seemingly had a bit of a shift? You know, out of the White House, I think this was last month, came word to immigration officials to put a pause on the raids at farms and hotels and restaurants, which makes sense. You know, when the president first started the deportations, it was, we're going to be deporting criminals and people beyond those breaking the law by just being in our country without permission. This was originally a deportation of those who took part in criminal activity, either in our country or back home in theirs. We were going to go after criminal illegal aliens. But I think what happened is that there was pressure from the White House and maybe from Kristi Noem, you know, to get the numbers up. And, you know, we want to get deporting people in large numbers. So they widened their net. But it's kind of hard to just walk down the street and say, excuse me, are you illegal? Finding those folks is challenging. And the deal is some illegal aliens, some of them work. And so they go to work and it's easy to catch them there. And as a practical matter, you had agents saying, well, you know, what if I go to the farm? I can just get 5 or 10 of them right there and that'll get the boss off my back. In Los Angeles, like we have in Reno, they have a day labor place, a couple of them, and they're all out in front of a market or a big box store or at construction sites, and they'll be there 6 o'clock in the morning, and they'll just be waiting for, illegals to nab. Easy to get numbers, but very disruptive to work sites and farms. You lose your crew. You don't milk your cows. You don't pick your apples. You don't plant your onions in Yarrington. I don't know. You're in trouble, right? So farms, hotels, and restaurants, Trump said, put a pause on doing that. And we got to work out something because some of these foreign people we need, just like your great-grandparents were needed in the day. And let's make a lawful way for them to come here. Or maybe, if they're good people, to lawfully stay here. That needs to be worked out now. And hopefully that gets worked out soon. No, I'm not going to run for office. I'm John Potter, live and local, each and every Saturday, 9 to noon. Going to take a short break and be back. Be ready to call in to talk to the Douglas County Republicans. They're coming on at 11 o'clock. Until then, it's just me and you. So give us a call, 884-9910. I'll read your texts, too, up next. We're going to take a short break. 99.1, 92.3 FM Talk, FM News Talk, time 1044.
Fox News and live FM Talk Radio. KKFT 99.1 FM Talk. And live right now with your calls.
The Weekend on News Talk 99.1 and 92.3 FM.
Hello, John Potter back with you live and local. I said when I started that I woke up this morning to no alerts on my phone. There were no shootings in Reno overnight. No deadly crashes and sparks. No riots in Carson City. Trump didn't say anything. Putin didn't bomb anywhere. Netanyahu didn't kill anybody. And I thought my battery was dead. But no, it was the rare and precious, peaceful night. Peace on earth. I hope we get some momentum with that. It's weird for a longtime newsman to say this, but I dearly love the non-event days. And they don't happen often enough. You know, before the overnight, we did have a traffic death in Elko County. Another in Eureka County. We had a man's body pulled from Donner Lake, and those are the top stories. But you know what else did not alert my phone? No fires. No fires. As a matter of fact, we have no active fires in northern Nevada at the moment. At the Grand Canyon, and this is enormously underreported, and I am heartbroken over this, the ongoing Dragon Bravo fire has scorched pretty close to 12,000 acres and with zero containment. Firefighters are preparing for a new challenge, rising temperatures and lower humidity. The incoming hot, dry conditions similar to those that drove the fire's rapid growth on July 12th are expected to return as early as tomorrow. And let me just tell you real quick about the Grand Canyon when you go there. The great likelihood is that you went to the South Rim. Have you folks been to the Grand Canyon? I would love to share experiences with you, 884-9910. But you probably went to the South Rim. Eons ago, that area, the land, started rising. And the best theory geologists have is that the Colorado River, as the land rose, continued to erode its bed, and ultimately we were left with the Grand Canyon, this staggering, unique in the world sort of geologic feature. And what a beautiful place, incredible grandeur. And people flock there in the summertime. The American road trip vacation is part of our shared culture. You hop in the car, maybe go to Yellowstone. That's the biggest and the best drive all the way east through Nevada. You go north at Wells, you cross Twin Bridges, Idaho into Montana, or go to California, see those giant trees at the Redwoods or the Sequoias. There's so many places to see, and the Grand Canyon in Arizona is my biggest, most favorite one. 95% of the people who visit the Grand Canyon do so at the South Rim. There's a place called it's majestic, Grand Canyon Village, and it's a wonderful place. You go there, you stand there on the edge, and oh my gosh, You take in the view, you feed the little squirrels. It's a great, great experience. And on the other side of the Grand Canyon is the North Rim, which is a bit of a different world. It's far harder to get to by car, so there are far fewer people there. It's also a different kind of climate. It's 1,000 feet higher, so the vegetation is strikingly very different. On the south end at Grand Canyon Village, you got sort of the conifer scrub. Cedar trees is what they are mostly, and it's sort of what you and I might imagine like in a cowboy movie or something. On the north rim, with the higher elevation, it's a lot more alpine. There's a lot more grass. There's more precipitation. And by and large, it's incredible. You will probably see buffalo. You'll see elk. You see mule deer. Maybe you see antelope. And it's a beautiful, wonderful, spectacular place. Well, on the 4th of July, lightning struck one of those trees on the north rim, which is in a national forest. And the tree caught fire, and the fire spread, and the National Park Service thought, well, you know, let's let this burn a bit. We need to clear out the woods, and so we'll just do a contained burn. And unfortunately, as so often happens, the National Forest Service did not guess exactly right, and the fire got out of their control, and it has dramatically enlarged. I'll talk about what's been lost that people don't realize after we take a call or two. Let's go to Joe calling. Oh, there you go, my man. The North Rim, is that what you're calling about?
Absolutely. I've been fortunate enough to go there three times. One in the 80s, one about 15 years ago, and one about 5 years ago. And what everybody is going to miss, when you face the front of the lodge, the extreme left last cabin, the best in the place is what we had. And in the morning, before the sun comes up, hundreds of people walk down about 200 yards to watch the sunrise from the east over the mountains. It is just spectacular. I still have all my pictures and video.
Have you followed what this fire has done, Joe?
Oh, yeah. It's wiped out the place.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
Right. When you drive in from whatever that cutoff is to go in, it's like 30, 40, 50 miles. I remember first time there, I saw a pair of turkeys with a dozen little ones behind them and a lot of buffaloes. It was just amazing.
So that's my changed until now. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, my friend, thank you so much. I rarely meet some North Rimmers. But it's awesome to talk to you. About 85% do the South Rim. Anyway, this fire, it's now called the Dragon Bravo Fire. And over the last couple of days, it swept down toward the North Rim. And it just takes me back to that Grand Canyon run that I did by myself 3 years ago when I went across the canyon on foot. I flew in a Phoenix, rented a car. I drove up to Grand Canyon Village in the South Rim. I spent the night, and there's a shuttle in the morning. It's a lady and her husband. They own this business, and they have like this 10-passenger van. And mostly the people they run back and forth are hikers. And she makes a round-trip journey each day, picking up people from the south and going over to the north, drop them off, and then pick them up at the North Rim and take them down to the south or drop them off. You run the rim to rim. That's what I did. It was almost a religious experience for me. It was an incredible experience, and when you get to the north side, you have to then climb up the side of the Grand Canyon, and it's 1,000 feet higher than the rim where you started, and finally you break to the top. And I talked about this run a few months ago, and I won't bore you with all the drama and the magnificence of that amazing ordeal, but at the end, I was so relieved and so exhausted and so achy and so looking forward to my room at the Grand Canyon Lodge. But how do I get there? You know, I saw there were little signs and a path, and it turns out the Grand Canyon Lodge is another 2 miles. There's no taxi, there's no shuttle there, there's no Uber, there's just walk that way. So you walk your 2 miles, and you get to a cluster of buildings, And then there's this one giant made seemingly out of stone, and that's the Grand Canyon Lodge. It opened in 1928. They had a big fire in 1932, then reopened it in 1957 using this huge, giant ponderosa pine beams from the forest out there, and you just stepped into another era where you were in the lodge, and they had this whole bunch of little cabins, and that's where you stayed, and a big ballroom of sorts inside the lodge. And on the backside of Grand Canyon Lodge, they had like this big stone porch veranda with chairs out there and couches, just real rustic wooden ones. And it looked out over the rim, and you just saw, you know, the absolute beauty of the canyon. At any rate, the Dragon Bravo fire has burned all of the buildings at the North Rim, about 80 of them at least. Structures have been destroyed, including the historic Grand Canyon Lodge. Everybody was evacuated from the North Rim, and it is shut down for the rest of the year at least. I don't know if people will be allowed to hike over there for a long time. There, of course, were livelihoods and families who worked at the lodge over there, and it's all destroyed, burned up in a horrible forest fire. And I think that most folks won't be able to grasp the beauty of what's been lost. And my hope is that it will be rebuilt. A lot of it is of stone, and maybe a lot of it stood up to the fire like it did in 1932 and can be rebuilt again. I pray and hope so. But the unfortunate reality is that the National Park Service has had a significant reduction in its funding, of course, not enough money to rebuild an entire village. And I hope there is the commitment and the interest to do it, because I was awestruck at how beautiful and wonderful the Grand Canyon Lodge on the North Rim is, or was. The most beautiful and wonderful words do not do justice. One of those treasures that we just assumed would always be there and that we took for granted. I'm John Potter. This is Live and Local each and every Saturday from 9 to noon. Oh boy, the Douglas County Republicans are up next. They look feisty. We're going to break for Fox News 99.1 FM Talk.